Welcome back, everyone. We are here today to continue our discussion on envisioning sustainable futures together with Ulrike Pisiotis, one of the authors of the GreenCom framework and working at the European Commission. Following the previous episodes considering these competence areas as a whole, I would allow now to focus more in detail to the competences. And would you tell us more about the future literacies and adaptability, please, Ulrike?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question, Valeria. So first of all, I mean, literacy or being literate means to be proficient at something. Well, actually, it means to be proficient at reading or and writing. So futures literacy in that vein would mean to be very good at or to know very well the future. But that's not the case. So we will not necessarily know very well the future. So it's not really so much about the result, but it's about the process. In German, I'm German, we have a saying that goes like, der Weg ist das Ziel, which translates to something like, the path is already the destination. So, and that's maybe not just one path that leads to futures, but it can be many. Some of them are perhaps straightforward, some of them are perhaps more winding, and it's exactly about exploring how to get on those different paths. And again, okay, there will be a destination, so to speak. So I'm taking back partly what I said before, but again, this is not sort of a fixed state, but something that needs to be reflected, something that needs to be discussed. So what does that future or these different futures, what can they look like? So for that, we really need to take on board the views of different people and peoples, and perhaps even of different, you know, species and entities that are non-human and that or that cannot express themselves in a human way. So this is again something that is not so easy even to imagine for some people, and let alone to actually put that in practice. So thinking about such a sustainable future, you know, already sustainability means different things to different people. You know, some think about the environment perhaps only, but also I think we need to look at social practices. We need to look at the economy if we have really a holistic picture of the future. And also I have an example of Native American people, the Iroquois, who have this seven generation thinking. So this is a huge time span. So decisions that we make today, they should result in a sustainable world in seven generations in the future. So one generation would be us or you, roughly speaking. The second generation would be the children, the third, their grandchildren, fourth, the great-grandchildren, and so on and so on. And I mentioned that already in the beginning, it's usually quite difficult for us to think in those time spans, let alone to make decisions today that where we can say with a, you know, a quite a good conscience, I think this will still be sustainable in seven generations from now. But not only that, it also works looking backwards. So we can perhaps look at what we have today and see what decisions were taken seven generations or five or three generations back, and how did they lead to what we have today. And we can learn from that, hopefully. So it might be a good state that we are in, it might be a bad state that we are in. So it might have been good or bad decisions in the past, but that's something that we can learn from. And so what is also in the framework, what we speak about when we speak about futures literacy is something called probable futures, alternative futures, and preferred futures. And the difference is important, of course. Probable refers to futures that are probably going to come about if we have business as usual. So if we continue to live, to act, to work the way we do right now. Alternative could be bad or good, so it could be better or worse. That's an alternative. And preferred is the future state that is more sustainable. So there we have to look at the decisions we have to take to get to this preferred future where we have an environment that is much less impacted than today, where we have an economy and society that is much more sustainable. And to have this vision is then really the motivation to get to this future. And maybe I was a bit philosophical now, but I think I believe really that's something that can be practiced already at school, and something that can already actively be changed in the school environment, and something that can also already be practiced with small children if you go about this in the right way. But of course, it means that teachers need training. I think. So far, when we look at teacher training courses or generally also at universities, there is maybe a course on sustainability. Usually it's optional. Some universities are now changing to making this obligatory. But still, this is still a long way from this kind of futures thinking. And how do you develop scenarios? How do you develop step by step scenarios? How do you do that with children? So I think this is something where we really have to do a lot more work.
Thank you so much, Ulrike. A community member is asking you actually a follow-up question, which I am going to read out loud right now. So, how much important is the empathy of children to connect with nature in this discourse? Recalling back Indigenous peoples, I recall when someone asked me, can you put yourself in the shoes of a plant? Or can you put yourself in the shoes of a tree? Can you think as if you were a plant or as if you were a tree? This creates in general conflict in a way with our perspective and with our learning methodologies. This is not considered as a crucial skill to have, to think like nature. But the capability to connect within living organisms, atmospheres, is not just part of our competencies. Part of our competencies, while it is key in their culture, meaning that it is taught across generations. The shock in this case also lies in the way they teach compared to us. We do teach through like teachers and provide information, while they learn by doing. So both aspects to me are very key and should be taught not just in Indigenous people's cultures, but also should be considered for our way of educational methodologies. So therefore, I would like they should be taught already in the kindergarten or even in children's family. Could you reply to our community member, Ulrike, please?
No, I love your examples, and actually it's something that the smaller the children, probably the less problem you have, because small children, they don't have a problem imagining themselves as a tree or as a plant. It's, you know, it's us adults who would say, oh, this is weird. But of course, and I said that, you know, if we want this sort of long-term generational thinking about future states, what is sustainable, we can not only think about us humans and what is sustainable or good for us, but we somehow have to, yes, bring those non-human entities on board. And for that, yes, we need a whole lot of empathy. And you have probably heard about that when we talk about sustainability education, or also we know from surveys from young people, they have a good knowledge of the challenges of climate change, of sustainability challenges. What they lack sometimes is the confidence to act, and also this perhaps this kind of empathy, actually, which I think is really the basis, then also that you feel something and you want to act on something. And so what we say is sustainability needs to be taught with a head, yes, but also with a heart and with a hand. So, and this kind of socio-emotional learning, it is not yet really happening on the ground. I mean, there you have a very good point. And of course, this has several reasons. It has reasons that we have an education system that was designed basically for, you know, industrial purposes, for a society where everybody had to come out with sort of the same education so that you can put them in the working line. I mean, we have a society that is changing, but education is a bit behind, I would say. So but it needs to adapt, and I think it needs to adapt fast, and it needs to take up precisely these things what you are saying, this kind of empathy, this social emotional learning, and we have to also find ways, because then what we usually hear is but then how do we assess that, because obviously it's much easier to assess knowledge, and you just, you know, you do a test or perhaps even a multiple choice test, that's really easy said and done. But how do you actually assess if somebody feels something or shows empathy or has empathy? We need to get there, and maybe we also don't need to assess it, but we definitely need to teach it and learn it and have that space and time in the curriculum and in the schools to have these opportunities where people can engage with empathy with nature.
It's very, very interesting what you were saying. And actually, when you both were talking, I just was like reminded in a way of an experience I had as well with an indigenous representative. And this person actually, he asked us, we were a group of people, and he asked us a similar question to what Jose Antonio was saying, like, can you imagine yourself as part of nature or like a plant, for example? And we couldn't even reply to that. But when we couldn't reply, he continued saying, okay, then for us, like, imagine in our culture, the indigenous group is actually from Latin America, from Brazil, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly. And they were saying that for them, for their specific group, nature and the land where they are living is basically a spiritual element, and they're actually, it's part of their own body as well. It's like an extension of their own body. And they made this example that stick to my mind for like ever, basically. And it will stick forever. And he said, think about like if you destroy nature, or in this case like a tree, he was saying it's like when you hurt yourself or you take off your hand, a hand, an arm or something like that. And that image is like what you were saying, basically, like the skill of empathy that we in our culture, because of what Rodrigo was saying, we don't have it so developed in a way, and we should intervene in that way in the education system as well. So Tremer, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Super quick, it's more an observation than a question really, but I was thinking about what Ulrike was saying, starting from the definition of sustainability in the Brundtland report. To tell the truth, we might need a new definition of sustainability because it's a bit old. But when you think about the words that are used, it's true that it's very much about the friction, the tension there is between the present and the future, which is linked to today's discussion. To my view, we should also consider more than the, not more, but on top of the here and then, on there, on top of the now and then, the here and there. Which is also what you said in a way, with by enlarging the discussion to the fact that we have to compare also what's happening in different locations, because we don't face the same issues, and we need to adapt, of course, with different situation. So here and there, and not just now and then. And the other thing, which is also something that can lead to a lot of discussion on the definition from the Brundtland report, is that we're talking about the needs of the current generation and the future generations. But are we really just talking about needs, or also about the wants? So there we could have a super long discussion on that, because defining the needs is something which is super, super complicated. But I share your view on the fact that empathy is absolutely key. Maybe not even taught in the education system, but I got the feeling that it's something which is more and more considered by a lot of education system, and especially for primary schools. I think it's an excellent news.
Thank you so much, Tremer, for these keywords to bear in mind. So we, just to repeat, focus also on here and there, not only on now and then. And thank you all for listening to this episode of the series on Learning Together. And I would like to recommend you to watch, to listen to the other episodes and check the digital version on Education for Climate, and in specifically in the GreenCon community, for further insights. So thank you all again, and bye bye.